That was enough for me. I went downstairs to sleep in the basement, even though it was pitch black. I left my sleeping bag upstairs, and that was a mistake, because it was freezing. I think it was probably the longest night of my life. To read more about the sleepover, check out Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Last Straw by Jeff Kinney. Explore new worlds and check out more cool books at your local library and visit read.gov. Brought to you by the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is the Gothabilly Man, your friendly neighborhood beatnik, inviting you to join me for the Wrecking Hours Rockabilly Psychabilly radio program every Monday from 4 to 6 p.m. right here on the station Making Waves, WHFR.FM.
Hi, this is Go Mike Holloway, inviting everyone to check out the Go at the Floor Mike Holloway Show every Tuesday afternoon, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., where I play only the best in rock and blues just for you, right here on WHFR.FM, the station that is always making waves.
Nobody ever says, "It's just cancer, get over it."
Or, "Snap out of it, it's just diabetes."
And who would ever say, "It's nothing serious, it's just heart disease"?
But you do hear those words about people living with another serious illness.
It's called depression, and it threatens the lives of more than 15 million Americans.
Like heart disease, its symptoms can be misleading.
Like diabetes, it's biologically based.
And like cancer, it can be fatal.
So what we should say is what doctors, medical professionals, and other experts say. Depression can be treated.
Which is why those who have overcome it say, getting treatment is like getting your life back.
Depression is real, but so is hope. Learn more at depressionisreal.org.
Supported by a coalition of mental health organizations, including Mental Health America, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and the National Medical Association.
Attention all WHFR listeners, you are invited, that's right, you, to our 2010 Spring Jazz Benefit featuring the Marvin Jones Trio, Sunday, April 11 from 4 to 8 p.m. at Andiamo's Dearborn, featuring the Marvin Jones Trio. Admission donation tickets only $5 at the door. All proceeds to benefit our nonprofit radio station, WHFR, and also jazz vocalist Sheila Landis.
My man don't love me, treats me awesome.
And for the first time on stage, the Feather Lizard Music Club. Call 313-845-9676 for more information. 313-845-9676. The 2010 WHFR Spring Jazz Benefit, Sunday, April 11 from 4 to 8 p.m. at Andiamo's in Dearborn. Hosted by Mark Anthony and LaBeth. Don't miss it.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. Where local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality.
Hey,
I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. Today, we're going to shift our attention to Michigan's Upper Peninsula, where you'll find a lot of cold weather and plenty of lakes and trees and frequent sightings of anomalous lights and even solid craft in the skies, and even a Bigfoot or two. And Lisa Scheel lives in Michigan's UP, where she has spent many years investigating the strange goings-on up there. And she's considered one of the leading authorities on Bigfoot. And Lisa's a former chief investigator for Michigan MUFON and the author of Evolution Conspiracy and Backyard Bigfoot, the story of sticks, signs, UFOs, and Sasquatch, and Strange Michigan. But what, if anything, does a Bigfoot have to do with the UFO phenomenon? Well, we're fortunate enough to have Lisa on the line with us today. So let's ask her. Welcome to the show, Lisa Scheel.
Thank you.
It's good to have you on. And Lisa sent me a copy of her book recently, and the Strange Michigan. And as a Michigander, I found it very, very interesting. And it covers everything from the odd and eccentric to the downright weird and unexplainable. So, first of all, Lisa, how did you get involved in the strange goings-on in Michigan?
Well, I've been interested in strange things for a long time, so it was natural for me to get involved in something like Strange Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And Linda Godfrey, who is my co-author, asked me to participate in that book with her. And I was excited to do it.
Well, Linda Godfrey is the co-author, right?
Right.
Right. And sorry I failed to mention her on that one. But now we've given her credit, so she can't sue me. So very good. And, yeah, you do have a lot of, it's chock full of nuts is what it is. Crazy things and silly things and yet very strange ghost stories and UFO stories, Bigfoot stories. You specialize in the Bigfoot area, don't you?
That is one of my main interests, yep.
Yeah.
And I wrote a book about Bigfoot. So.
Right. Well, you have a couple of stories in Strange Michigan about Bigfoot, but also UFOs. Let's go to, do you have your copy right there?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Go to page 11, and I have you you can either read that story, or you can just tell what it's about, the red UFOs. You see that one, Birmingham, Michigan?
Right. That's one of the contributors. We have a lot of people, individuals, who submitted their stories for things that they have seen or that they know about. So that's what this story is, from Birmingham, Michigan.
Right.
Where they saw some UFOs late at one night about 10 o'clock. And actually, that is a story that my co-author found, someone who contacted her. So I didn't actually talk to that person, but I talked to some other people who had other kinds of sightings. So that's the interesting thing about this book, is that we, you know, there's a lot of stories where we talked to the individuals and actually got to, you know, not just have an email from them, but actually talk to them and get all the details. So Strange Michigan does run the gamut from silly things up to things like this, where it's a witness contacted us and wanted to share their story.
Right. Well, what about these red UFOs in Birmingham? Were they just lights, or says July of August 1980?
They were described as star-like lights.
Okay.
One above the other one that were red.
Mm-hmm.
And the witness wasn't sure how far away they were from where they were standing, so it's not as good a one as some other stories, because, you know, the witness couldn't be sure how far away it was. Right. They looked like stars or planets. But the, another story that would be, you know, a little more clear would be something like the one in Howl, where a witness saw a big UFO that he described as big as a house. And that had flames shooting out the back of it.
Wow.
And he described that as looking kind of like a lampshade in, the, in that it was lit from inside with a thin skin with the light showing through it. And it was cigar-shaped glowing object that was directly above his head. And he, both he and his friend saw it. And this happened in 1958. And he said it was so close he could almost touch it. And it had a flame shooting out the back end of it, and it seemed to go off past the road they were standing on, past the little lake, and he thought it must have landed, but he and his friend ran home, and they were too scared to go see if it had landed.
Were they kids at the time?
They were teenagers.
Okay.
And this, it was about 1:30 in the morning. They were coming home from town, walking down Kellogg Road just outside of Howell when they saw this thing.
Okay, teenagers, 1:30 in the morning, you know what the skeptics are going to say.
Oh, yeah.
They were drunk, they were high, yada, yada.
Well, I talked to the witness, Nelson, for quite a while on the phone, and he was a very serious-minded guy. You know, he worked on all kinds of engineering projects later in his life, and he said he still didn't know what it was, even after working on all sorts of mechanical things since then. He still has no explanation for it. And he says, you know, they weren't drunk. This was, you know, he just wasn't, he was very believable, you know, when I talked to him. He didn't like to talk about it for a long time afterwards, but then he started wanting to find out what it was, but he still doesn't know.
So the prospect of him possibly being drunk did come up in the conversation?
Oh, yeah, but I didn't get the impression that it was anything like that.
Yeah. You know, I've mentioned this on the show before. A guy at MUFON had a little saying, you don't get drunk and see UFOs. You see UFOs, then you go get drunk. Yeah.
I've talked to a lot of people who would probably feel that way. But they might have wanted to get drunk after what they saw.
Yeah. I can, you know, I often think, I had my sighting in 1962, and it was at Joy Road in Southfield, if you're familiar with the Detroit area?
Not very.
Okay, well, busy intersection, and there are bars down there. I could just imagine somebody's walking out of the bar at 11 o'clock at night, looking up and seeing this huge thing as big as a 2 football fields, you know, and saying, I'm never going to drink again. Just imagine that. So yeah, it's this type of thing, these huge, you know, not just lights in the sky. You're right about that. Not just lights in the sky, no matter what color they are, but huge, as big as a house. Now, you say it was lighted from inside, you know, what are those called? Chinese lanterns that they set aloft sometimes, and people mistake them for UFOs. But if this one was as big as a house and it was close enough almost to touch, when he said that, I assume he means like right over treetop level. Is that what he?
It was right above his head.
Right above his head.
Right.
Oh, my Lord.
Floating above their heads, yeah.
And did they have any kind of physical reaction as a result of this?
No, it didn't
burns?
Really seem to have anything like that, other than fear.
Other than
fear? Very disturbed by it.
And I assume they turned and ran, or?
They ran home.
Huh. Did he say that he experienced any missing time?
No, it didn't mention anything about that.
Because very often when they come that close to an individual, people say, you know, I went on home and it should only take me a half hour to get home, and I realized it was 3 hours later and can't understand that. And
I know something like that happened to me when I lived in Texas.
Aha.
When I had a sighting.
Okay, well, let's hear that story. Let's go from Michigan to Texas.
I lived out in the country. But there were houses around, but it was basically a country area. Mm-hmm. And there were horse farms. It was a big horse area. Mm-hmm. And I noticed one evening some very bright lights off in the distance that hadn't been there before. So my mother happened to be there, and we walked out behind the house up the little hill back there for a better look, and we could still just see these bright lights, and we couldn't figure out what they were because they had never been there before. Mm. So we decided to hop in my car and drive down the roads. There's a road that kind of curves back around into this little area. So when we drive these roads a lot, so we knew how long it took to get there and back. Mm. We drove over there, came up a little hill, and on the left side of the road was a horse farm. And we could see the barn and lights on in the barn. But then behind and above the barn, about 50 feet or maybe 100 feet off the ground, were these six huge, very bright lights.
Hmm.
And it was so bright that they could have been attached to something. We just couldn't tell because it was so bright. You know, the lights were blinding us to being able to see what they were attached to, or they could have been individual objects.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard to tell. That we saw these, and we were just kind of stunned. What are those things? Are those arena lights like people have around their riding arenas? But we had never noticed there being any big arenas back there before, and we'd never seen these lights before.
Mm-hmm.
Besides, they were enormous, bigger than football stadium lights. You know, they were huge.
Right.
So we drove a little further, and then there was a little driveway that was an entrance to a gas well enclosure, natural gas well. We pulled over this little driveway and we stopped. We could still see the lights behind the trees a little bit. And we sat there for what we thought was a few minutes. Then we turned around and we drove home.
Mm-hmm.
Still very confused, not sure what it was we had seen, but that it was something that had never been there before. And we got home and discovered it had taken about 25 minutes longer than it should have for us to get there. We thought we'd just sat in that little driveway for a few minutes, but we had this time that we couldn't account for now that shouldn't have taken that long for us to get home because it wasn't that far away.
Right.
And so we had this little bit of missing time there.
Not that
much. And afterwards,
much.
We were very lethargic and tired for days afterward.
Hmm.
And a week later, we drove back in the daytime to that area.
Right.
And we drove all around on various roads to look at it in different directions. And there's nothing there. Nothing that would have big lights on it, nothing at all, just fields behind this horse farm.
Wow. Yeah, it's the type of story that you hear repeated again and again and again. And, you know, the skeptics will say, well, I don't believe it because it's the same story over and over again. Well, that's why you should believe it, because
right. It's
the same story over and over again.
Right, if you have witnesses to a crime and they all tell the same story, then that's good.
Yeah.
That's what the cops want.
Yeah, I don't believe it.
Witnesses to strange things tell the same story, then it's suspicious.
Yeah, I don't believe it because this guy said he shot him and this guy says he shot him and... You know, how can you believe it when everybody says he shot him? I don't know. Well, that is interesting. Is that the only UFO story that you have, that you witnessed in your life? Or?
Oh, I've seen some other things. In fact, when I was about 14, I saw a UFO. My family was living in California at the time in the mountains, the Tehachapi Mountains. And my bedroom had a big window that went almost from floor to ceiling. You could have walked out of like a door if you took the screen out. And it overlooked the side of the mountain that we lived on.
Mm.
And I one night saw this big object going down, you know, very low at the same slope as the mountain.
Mm.
And so I was scared. I ran and told my parents, and they thought, well, maybe a plane crashed or something.
Yeah.
But we never heard of any plane crash, and we all went and looked out the big living room windows, which were floor-to-ceiling, covered the whole living room, and we couldn't see anything. And so that was the first strange thing I ever saw, and probably what started me on the path to my current level of interest in it all.
Well, how old were you when you say you're 14 at this time? How old were you when you had this experience in Texas?
Oh, well, that was about 6 years ago.
Well, that was just 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right before I moved back to Michigan.
I see. And so you weren't born and raised in Michigan?
My parents were both born in Michigan.
Ah.
We lived here when I was little, and my dad was in the Air Force, so we moved around a lot.
Okay. So yeah, is he out of the Air Force now? I mean, you're
wrong. Oh yeah, he's retired. He worked in the defense industry and retired from that, and so.
Ah.
Yep.
Defense industry. Of course, did he have any stories to tell, or?
He never saw anything when he was flying. We all three of us once in Texas saw what looked like a big missile going across the sky, but there are no missile bases around there. And my dad even asked some of his pilot buddies, if they knew of anything that could have been, but nobody had any idea what it was. It looked huge. Had a big contrail or smoke trail behind it. It was coming from the direction of Fort Worth, Texas, towards the town where we lived, which was northwest of Fort Worth. So that was strange, too, because there was nothing in that area that would have been shooting off something like that.
Hmm. You say a contrail, like an airplane's contrail? Or?
Similar. I mean, I wouldn't be able to tell if it was a contrail or a smoke trail or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it looked like when you see pictures on TV of like the shuttle taking off or a missile being fired off. It looked like that kind of trail.
About what year was this?
That was maybe 7 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, 80% of UFO sightings are misidentification. So that may have been a conventional object, the way you describe it. At the same time, he was in the Air Force, right?
Right.
He should know what belongs in the air.
And there were no bases with missiles around there,
right.
Nothing like that.
So it didn't act like a plane, it acted like a missile.
Well, it was the shape of a missile. We could see the shape of it.
And no wings.
Right.
Okay, you witnessed this as well?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So, both my parents and I, all three of us saw it.
Well, if not you, your dad sure should have known what was what belongs in the sky, huh?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
He's not prone to thinking things are strange. He wants to find the rational explanation. And of course,
yeah,
that's what I like to look for too. Is what could it have been?
Well, yeah, you're an investigator, and the first thing we investigators do is say, "What prosaic answer can we come up with?" Because whatever's left over must be anomalous, right?
Right.
So, are you still with the MUFON?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm mainly doing writing now, not so much of the investigation of sightings.
Okay. Now, is this writing like Strange Michigan or Bigfoot or?
Oh, well, I'm currently working on a book that I have a contract with a publisher called The History Press. They've asked me to write Forgotten Tales of the Upper Peninsula, which will include strange stories like that, too. It's going to be kind of quirky stuff and the weird stuff like Bigfoot and ghosts and all that kind of thing.
Right. Well, that's good. That's great. I need to take a break just for a few seconds to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM. The only station making waves here in Dearborn, Michigan, in the Henry Ford Community College. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with investigator and author Lisa Scheel from UP of Michigan. And let's go back to your book a second here. Strange Michigan is the name of this book. And I'm dropping everything out of the book right now. Strange Michigan is the name of the book. Page 13, The Highway Triangle. That was it, The Highway Triangle.
Right, this is a sighting that came from the National UFO Reporting Center website. A witness said he saw a triangular object. This happened near Boyne Falls, which is in the northern Lower Peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
He saw a triangular object floating low in the sky over the M-75 highway. This happened on October 4th, 2007. and it was moving over M-75 and down to cross over U.S. 131, which is another highway there. He estimated it was higher than the hill at the ski resort, which is called Boyne Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 1,190 feet high, so it would have, if it was just above that hill, it would have been, you know, 1,200 feet or a little more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that the lights from vehicles and other buildings and things like that were reflecting on the underside of this craft that he saw.
Hmm. Hmm.
And so, you know, there's been a lot of triangular UFO sightings.
Yeah.
Here's one from Michigan.
Yeah, I just got, in fact, I was just given a investigation, a report to investigate for MUFON from Manistee. And this is on the heels of finding a report that I, you know, wasn't assigned to me, but it was another one from Manistee, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on the heels of another one I just got through investigating from Central Lake, Michigan. Now, Manistee is 101 miles south of Central Lake, and they're all on the Michigan Lake side, the west side of Michigan, which is where Lake Michigan is. And now, what's going on over Lake Michigan? You remember in 96 or 97, Holland, Michigan was inundated with these UFOs. You remember that incident?
Right.
Yeah. And but these were all these two from Manistee and the one from Central Lake were all triangular shaped objects. So it seems anymore that people are not seeing so much the disc-shaped, typical disc-shaped objects, but triangular-shaped objects. Do you find that that's true in your investigations?
Well, it sure seems like it.
It does.
From the stories I read, and, you know, it seems like those are becoming the predominant shape that people see.
Yeah. Don't know why, do we?
No.
Yeah, they say that we humans here, we earthlings have that type of craft, you know. But even if we do, why are they? It's like in Arizona. If that was our prototype, well, number one, it must be out of the prototype stage, and number two, why are they flying these prototypes over the entire state of Arizona?
Right. And I've talked to my dad about this because, like I say, he was an Air Force pilot. And he thinks it would be really stupid for them to be doing that, too. And, in fact, I wrote about this on my blog a couple years ago, that they have a lot of restricted airspace that they could use. So if the military had some kind of new kind of plane that they wanted to test fly, why would they be flying it over big cities and along highways and, you know, places like that, when they have all this airspace that is free of other air traffic and not near big cities that they could be using to test fly their planes.
Right, and like in Stephenville, Texas, where that huge triangular-shaped object was seen going towards the Crawford Ranch, George Bush,
right.
George W. Bush, towards his ranch, and it was being chased by fighter planes from the base over there. Now, both the fighter planes and the triangular shaped object were going over restricted airspace that they don't belong in. That's civilian airspace, so that's restricted to them. So why would they fly prototypes over big cities like Phoenix, Arizona? It doesn't make sense. So even if we do have them, wouldn't fly them over.
It doesn't make sense that the government would be flying the secret airplanes over big populated areas like that.
No,
they could have mass sightings of them.
Yeah, and they've stopped saying that it's theirs. It's their technology, their prototypes, you know. And the reason they've stopped saying that is because they say, you know, the ufologists say, fine, all you got to do is prove that by giving us a date, giving us a time, a location, and do a flyover. You know, and this, well, oh, we can't do that. Why not? Because it's a secret. Wait a minute, didn't you just fly it over the entire state of Arizona? And you just got through telling us that's your secret prototype. So it's not a secret anymore. Fly the darn thing over. No, we can't do that. No, you can't do that because you're lying through your teeth. Hey, calm down. Anyway, let's talk about your Bigfoot investigations. Let us know about that, man. What have you found out? Do you have any Bigfoot sightings in the Upper Peninsula?
None that people have told me about recently. I don't actively collect sightings anymore, but when I did, I got several from the UP. The thing is, up here, I've discovered that a lot of people don't like to talk about it when they see strange things.
Right.
You know, so they will wait, you know, 20, 30 years before they start telling people that they saw something.
I found it.
Because nobody wants to be made fun of or feel stupid or anything like that, especially in a small area where most everybody knows everybody else.
Right.
So a lot of those sightings that I got were, you know, things people saw years earlier, and they finally decided to report it because they just didn't know what it was. But there was one where the guy called me a few days after he saw it. This was near Gwin, which is south of Marquette, and he was canoeing on a private lake when he saw something on the shoreline. And he looked at it, and it looked at him, and it was a hairy, bipedal creature that was kneeling on the shore. Looked like it was drinking water with a piece of concave wood. And he looked at it, and it looked at him, then it got up and walked off and seemed to be limping a little bit. And it went off out of sight, and he canoed over to the shore, got out and looked around, but he couldn't see the creature anymore, but he saw what might have been imprints of its knees in the sand there.
Did he get...
This was in an area where he says his relatives had seen strange things before, some hairy creatures.
Did they try setting up cameras with motion sensors or anything like that?
No, the sightings his relatives had were many years earlier.
Okay.
I think before those kind of cameras were around.
Oh, I see. Okay, you did say he just came forward after many years, yeah.
But, right. I mean, I have cameras set up in the woods around my house because I found stick signs, and I have had some glimpses of something that may have been Bigfoot, and I've heard strange noises. So I have several cameras out in the woods. And I have never gotten a picture of anything. You know, I've seen a mountain lion, too, in this area, but I don't get pictures of them. And I find lots of bear scat and don't get pictures of them most of the time.
Yeah.
So, now, you know, it's difficult to get pictures of the wildlife that is more shy and doesn't want to get seen.
Right, right. Yeah, we have a guy in MUFON that's always talking about the cougar sightings here in Michigan. And people see these cougars, and the skeptics say, crazy, we don't have cougars in Michigan. That's silly. And do you remember, it wasn't too long ago, a couple of years ago, that in the middle of Chicago, the police shot and killed a big cougar. And you think, well, maybe it escaped from a zoo. It didn't. It was a wild cougar.
Right. Well, the DNR has confirmed that there are cougars in the UP.
Okay.
You know, there were some footprints, and I believe they had some scat that they tested, too.
Mm-hmm.
They have said there are cougars in the UP, but, you know, they like to say, oh, it's escaped pets or something like that.
Oh, my.
But I saw a cougar here in my house in the Keweenaw Peninsula, which sticks up from the western end of the UP. Small area, you know, but I saw a cougar here.
Saw a cougar?
With my own eyes.
Right.
And I've talked to other people who have seen them, too,
right.
In the same, not very large peninsula.
No. Okay, now, you mentioned stick signs. Now, that was in your book, one of your books.
That's in Backyard Bigfoot, right?
Yeah.
Which talks mostly about my personal experiences. In fact, my UFO story from Texas is in there.
Uh-huh. And what exactly are stick signs now?
Well, stick signs are sticks on the ground.
Okay.
That's the short answer.
That's the short answer.
The long answer is there are sticks that are arranged in geometric formations and other purposeful-looking formations, and they appear overnight because I walk the same trails through my property every day.
Mm.
Go for walks with my dogs. So I know what is on these trails. I know what the weather's been like, if it's been windy or, you know, if there's been a storm or not. And I will find these stick signs along the trails or frequently out in the field away from trees, and they will be, they're usually about the same length, maybe a foot long. Sometimes they're a little shorter, a little longer, but generally about a foot long. And they are laid out in these formations, crosses, T-shapes, parallel sticks. I found triangle shapes.
Hmm.
And box shapes, you know, just all kinds of shapes that are not natural. And in fact, last summer, there was it was very windy. We had lots of winds all the time, but I found hardly any stick signs. So you would think if it was just being blown down by wind into these geometric formations, that I would have found lots of them last summer when it was very windy.
Right.
But instead, I found very few.
Hmm.
And I've also found footprints in the same areas where I find these stick signs. Like in Texas, I also found these stick signs. And in the book, there's a picture of a footprint, a very large footprint. Looks a lot like Bigfoot footprints.
Okay.
Which I found in the same area where I find these stick signs.
Hmm. So it's not just random, you know, sticks falling in a random position or in your, you know, possibly make something of it, or but
no, they're frequently out away from the trees.
Okay.
And when it's not windy, when there hasn't been a storm,
right.
And they weren't there one day and they are there the next day. And I have made my own little signs and had them changed into different shapes. Which is some kind of response, I would think, but I don't know what we're saying to each other.
Yeah. It would seem. Maybe Bigfoot saying, no, Lisa, you got that wrong. It's supposed to be like this.
Correcting my misspellings.
You're misticking.
That's right.
You have misticked, Lisa. Yeah, no, I'm not making fun of it because that does sound odd, you know, if nothing
else. And I found some that had things other than sticks in them. One was a stick with a piece of green mesh, like from a welcome mat or something, but a very small piece of it that was, and they were arranged in a T-shape, the stick and the piece of mesh. And I have found reeds that didn't grow in the area where I lived. They were down the road, maybe a quarter mile, was the nearest place where you could find these reeds, and they appeared on my property arranged in shapes.
Now, have you ever, you say you set these stick signs up trying to see if you get a response, which you often do, correct?
Right, I have.
And do you ever set your motion sensor camera up in that area?
Oh, yeah, I've tried that. I would make a stick sign in front of the camera, but then one would appear behind the camera.
Well, get two cameras. Maybe they're smart enough. Maybe they do know.
You know? I mean, the wild animals like bears and mountain lions and bobcats are all avoid the cameras, too.
Yeah, do they? Brother. That's wild.
I've had one picture of a bobcat on the camera. You know, just one.
Does the light turn on?
It has a flash, but that comes on after it's triggered.
Yeah, so it'd be too late for them to...
Right, it doesn't make noise till it takes the picture.
Right, right. Huh.
Yeah.
My goodness, that is odd. But well, keep setting that camera up, and you know.
No, I might get lucky.
you never know. But other than setting up a sign and rearranging it. Well, you say it rearranges your stick signs, and if that's the case, if you have the camera pointed right at the sign that you have made, then maybe you'll catch him. If he's rearranging your sign, you can't do it behind the camera, right?
Well, I don't rearrange every sign I make.
No.
You never know when that will happen.
No. They say, oh, there's a camera. He's using a camera again. My goodness. That is amazing, though. So your book on Sasquatch goes into the stick signs.
And, there's a whole chapter and lots of photos in there of the stick signs.
Right. Now, I've often thought, haven't been that interested in, I believe that there is a creature that we refer to as a Bigfoot. I believe that there are all kinds of creatures out there that we don't know about. You know, there's a new species, thousands of new species being born every day, coming into existence every day, whether it be plants or, fish or animals. But I kind of, to me that's cryptozoology, and I don't generally delve into that. But lately, I've been told, and I believe it's true, I should pay attention more to that type of thing, because many times there have been UFOs seen in the proximity of a Bigfoot sighting. Do you find that to be true in some of your reports?
It has happened, yeah. And there are places where they're seen not at the same time, but in the same area. Synchronicity of the sightings, where they don't occur simultaneously, but they're in the same little area frequently, repeatedly.
Yeah. So you never know. And it's also been suggested that these creatures, these biological creatures, not only Bigfoot, but also the what we call aliens, the gray aliens and what have you, are other dimensional in nature as opposed to extraterrestrial. And maybe it's in a dimension that is parallel right here next to our reality and is coming through.
And yeah, it's possible.
So,
We know there are other planets out there, but right now scientists can't prove whether there are other dimensions. So it's possible, but right now it seems more probable that they're coming from somewhere else that we know is out there.
Yeah, although I have heard in quantum physics that they have identified 12 other dimensions.
Well, they mainly determine that through math. It's the only way to make sense of the mathematics of it all,
right,
is to say that there are other dimensions.
Right.
But as of now, nobody's created a doorway to one or been able to detect one.
Right. And yet, I've heard stories, as weird as they might be. There was one guy, I forget exactly where it was, but this was in the 1800s. He was walking out of his home, I guess it was a farmhouse, to meet a friend who came up in his horse and buggy, and he's walking toward the road, and he just vanishes, but everybody could hear him right there on the lawn screaming to help him, but they could not see him. And then the screaming died down, and he was never seen or heard from again. Now, this might be urban legend, I don't know, but
it's a lot like the fairy lore, like of the Celtic areas of Europe, where people were said to have been taken into another world in much the same way. They would just disappear,
right,
and then they'd be brought back later.
Right.
So it's quite similar. It's an old idea.
Yeah, well, you wonder how much of this... these Celtic lores or you know, fairy tales or whatever are based in the abduction phenomenon.
Right.
You know, because leprechauns allegedly were supposed to have taken the babies away in the night and bring them back.
Right.
You know?
And, you know, there were hairy creatures associated with the fairies.
Right, right. So who knows? Maybe this is what was going on. What we're seeing today in the abduction phenomenon is what was going on then, and it was being reported then, but, of course, it was being scoffed at back then. And so they took the leprechaun idea and put a little green hat on them and a four-leaf clover and a little pipe, whatever. They made up this little character. But the truth behind it is the same thing that's going on today. What do you think?
Right. I think a lot of the old legends and myths have a kernel of fact at their heart. You know, something that did happen, people did see. But to make sense of it all, they come up with, the culture develops a story around it.
Right, right. Kind of protect their own sanity, I suppose. I need to take one more break just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and I am David Twitchell. The name of the show is We Are Not Alone. And we're speaking with Lisa Shields. She is a UFO investigator, a Bigfoot investigator. She is an author of Strange Michigan, along with Linda Godfrey. We have to mention Linda Godfrey's name again because you'll probably turn Linda Godfrey onto this show, and she'll have to hear her name on it or she'll sue us. What do you think? You laugh. Go ahead. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, getting away from that for a moment, let's go to on your book, Strange Michigan. Let's go to page 27. This was Coopersville Hitchhiker. Whether or not that's an urban legend, I don't know, but I found it a fascinating story. Tell us about that.
Well, it's another story contributed by someone who contacted us. It's a ghost story down in Coopersville, where on I-96, they say that if you take the Coopersville exit late at night, that you might find a hitchhiker there, a man in his early to mid-30s, who will ask you for a ride. And if you pick him up, he'll ask if you believe in God. And then after you answer, he disappears.
He disappears from... You're sitting in your car and he disappears.
Apparently.
Yeah. And the author of that also said that they had a relative that this happened to, or...
Right. She's Nicole Bray is the woman who wrote it, and she said her former father-in-law was one of the fortunate people who met this hitchhiker.
Hmm. Now... What do you make of that story? Urban legend, truth, what?
Well, it's one of those things where it's hard to tell.
It's hard to tell. When I was a kid, have you ever heard of Knock Knock Street?
No.
When I was a kid in elementary school, the story was going around a certain street. I don't even remember the name of the street. They called Knock Knock Street because... if you drive down there at night and drive down that street, you'll hear a knocking at your door. And what happened was some kid years ago had caught his arm in the car door, and the driver did not know that the kid was hanging on in the door. His clothing was hanging in the door and being dragged down that street. And the kid was banging on the car trying to get the driver's attention, and it never did. And the child died, and now when you drive down that street, you hear knock, knock on the side of your car. No, 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 no. And, of course...
Yeah, there are legends like that all over the place.
You know, but the kids, everybody believed it. And then I heard later on in life, I heard there's a knock-knock street in Chicago. There's a knock-knock street in every city has a knock-knock street. Same kid, same drag kid down the street. And I said, ah, it's an urban legend. But so you just never know.
Yeah, you never know.
So
there are lots of strange things out there.
Right. And on page 45, bright lights above trees. What do you know about that story?
It was a witness who was driving near Fenton on Highway 23 about 9:15 at night, and he saw a white light hovering above the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And it came close to the tree line. The highway comes close to the tree line, which is a few feet from the road, according to the witness. And he said the object resembled a low-flying plane, and he had his car's windows rolled down and the radio playing. But he shut off the radio and said the object seemed to make no sound. And he drove past it, and then he could still see it in his rearview mirror moving sideways as if it was searching for something. And he continued on his way, but he thought that other drivers must have seen the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And these are no urban legends. I mean, you know, like 1% of these stories that come in are reported. 1% are hoaxes. And once again, like 80% are misidentification. But how do you misidentify something like that, you know? Especially this one on page 71. This one's closer to my home here in Dearborn. It happened in Inkster on page 71. Inkster Boomerang. Tell us about that.
This was in 1978 when a witness said that he saw a boomerang-shaped UFO. He got off a bus next to some buildings, and he saw above, up in the sky, he saw the full moon, and above the moon, he saw this boomerang-shaped, what he thought was a cloud, but it was larger than the moon and stationary and solid white and appeared to be pointing up, and there was no sound. And so, you know, he didn't know what it was. It was a white-shaped object that he at first thought was a cloud.
Okay. Yeah, these boomerang-shaped objects are becoming just about as prevalent as the triangular-shaped objects, you know that?
Right.
And this, like you say, it was in 1978, but at the same time, boomerang triangular-shaped objects are all, you know, pretty much similar, I would say. Back in 1987, late 1900s, the papers carried many accounts of these airships. This is also mentioned in your book on page 178, the airship invasion. But there were also, this was the dawn of the dirigible, the blimps, and don't you think some of this was the early stages of the blimps? They reported seeing these cigar-shaped objects in the late 1800s, early 1900s?
Well, these were seen all over the country. They were seen over cities and in more rural areas. In fact, there was one report of it, one being seen up here in the UP in Houghton County where I live.
Okay.
And, you know, there weren't really blimps yet at that point. There were people experimenting with basically gliders that people would hang from underneath, but they weren't even having much luck with that. People were crashing and dying in those things. So there wasn't really much out there, you know. There weren't dirigibles all over the skies.
No.
It wouldn't be until later that there would be a lot of those around. In fact, there used to be airship service up here in the Keweenaw. But that was years later and not at this time. So, you know, certainly some of these could have been some kind of a misidentification, but a lot of them, you know, don't sound like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I know in my book I talked about the airship, those dirigibles, or if they were dirigibles, end of 1800s, beginning of the 20th century, and speculating that perhaps they were the blimps or dirigibles. But at the same time, there were several stories that were this cigar-shaped object would be going along horizontally, stop, turn, and be vertical.
Right.
You know, and, you know, blimp's not going to stay aloft very long if they're vertical. So, yeah, some of them were probably, you know, I don't knows.
And these were seen by all kinds of people, including policemen. There was a sighting from Saginaw where they said that it slowed down and accelerated, and two policemen saw it and said it was cigar-shaped with a light inside that illuminated the whole vessel.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, it was all kinds of people who were seeing these. It wasn't just the people at the insane asylum.
Yeah, that sounds similar to the story you told earlier about the teenagers in that cigar-shaped craft, right?
Right, yeah. Yep. Very similar.
So maybe there was something to it back then. And they couldn't blame it on, well, that's our prototypes, you know, because we didn't believe man could fly at that time.
Right. So. Well, you know, we tend to think that media ridicule and debunking is all a modern phenomena, but if you look at the old newspaper reports from the 1800s, whether you're talking about UFOs or Bigfoot, they were doing it back then. They were ridiculing the stories and coming up with silly explanations for them.
Mm.
Like they like to dismiss the Bigfoot sightings by saying, "Oh, it was an escaped mental patient."
Just,
who was running around the woods and somehow grew hair all over his body.
Yeah, just needed to shave.
Right.
Right? Yeah. Okay. When was this? What year was this?
Well, that was in the 1800s, you know, 1880s and 90s. They would always come up with the same explanation for any time anybody saw a hairy bipedal creature. Their favorite explanation was that it was an escaped mental patient. At least here in Michigan, that's their favorite explanation.
Escaped mental patient. Well, they ought to try that with the abduction phenomenon, you know? You know, the guy came in my room, he abducted me, wow, don't worry about it. It was just a midget that was an escaped mental patient.
That's right.
Jeez, oh man. They come up with the wackiest excuses that don't fit the evidence, don't they?
Yep.
So what kind of, you mentioned your book that you're working on now, and tell us a little bit about that.
It's called Forgotten Tales of the UP. It's going to be, it's a series. Forgotten Tales is a series that the History Press publishes.
Right.
And this will be their first one about Michigan, and it's going to be about the UP, and I've been finding all kinds of old newspaper stories, because what they like to have with these books is that they're based on newspaper accounts, or, you know, books written at the time, back in the 19th century, early 20th century.
Mm.
You know, so that we're getting as close to the source as possible.
Right.
So I have found strange crimes, like a man who stole some butter and then wanted to return it to the police. And a story of a ghost spotted in a mine. And, of course, the Bigfoot stories, and back then they called them wild men, and liked to claim that they were just escaped mental patients.
Everything they can't explain is an escaped mental patient.
Right. Any bipedal thing seen in the woods is an escaped mental patient.
I see.
Even if it was 200 miles away from the insane asylum.
Right. He caught a ride.
Yeah,
you know?
Those are some...
He just behaved himself.
Well-traveled, escaped mental patient.
Yeah, he just behaved himself for a while, and then... Oh, boy. Go ahead.
So I have all sorts of stories like that. I have some lake serpent stories, too.
Mm-hmm.
Just anything that's offbeat or quirky or just
like
entertaining.
Like Loch Ness?
There was one scene just off Mackinac Island.
Was it?
A ship captain who said he saw a giant serpent in the lake.
Mm-hmm.
So there are all kinds of stories.
I'm
in fact still researching it, still trying to find even more stories because I want to have it chock full of good stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was going to say that there are still prehistoric fish that exist today. And when you stop and think about it, if this whole world was wiped out in a flood many, many years ago, what is going to survive? The ocean life, right?
Right.
Or in the fresh water life. So why wouldn't there be possibly prehistoric animals like that?
Right.
So you never. And,
I mean, all the continents have moved around. You know, they've
right.
all been connected at various times. So things could have gotten trapped in between. You know, when the continents moved.
Right.
Who knows?
Don't know. Now, where can people check out your work, Lisa?
Well, all my books are available on Amazon. You can find my two novels, and Backyard Bigfoot, and also The Evolution Conspiracy, which is another of my books. You can also get those at slipdownmountain.com.
Mm-hmm.
And Strange Michigan is on Amazon.
Okay. And you have a website, your own website?
I have three websites.
Oh, okay. Well,
I have strangemichigan.com, which has a lot of stories that aren't in the book, and some updates on ones that were in the book.
Okay.
I also have backyardphenomena.com, which is my paranormal site. And I have evolutionconspiracy.com.
Okay. Very good. And we'll look forward to reading about that that new one you're working on now, too. So, Lisa Scheel, I want to thank you very much for joining us. And maybe we can do this again sometime.
Definitely. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. Thank you. And I want to thank you for joining us. And if you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And this show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on the forum button on the homepage. We Are Not Alone is also archived at blackfaultradionetwork.com, as well as on my website, ufoimplications.com. So stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m., when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, I'm David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.